Okay, today we are doing a review of the Drush HaChamishi, the fifth Drush in the Drush HaSaran. We're going to review the whole thing, and next time, Mirtz Hashem, we will continue on to the sixth Drusha. Okay, so the Ran said in the fifth Drush, he started off by saying that everyone understands the purpose of creation is to serve Hashem, and in order to be able to do that, it must be that there would be Nevuah, so that Hashem could let people know what they need to do. If God would never talk to people, there's no way people on their own would be able to figure out what Hashem wants, because we're physical and we have no idea, we don't understand the soul. There's no way you can figure out on your own what your soul needs, therefore it must be that there has to be a thing called Nevuah, that some way Hashem could communicate with people. So, the Ran says that a Navi, someone who would connect to Hashem, and obviously that person should be a very special person, for several reasons. Number one, just for Kvod Shemayim, for the honor of Hashem, the person getting the Nevuah should be a tzaddik. But besides that, the Ran says that, Ran has said this many times, that like things go together. So, since Hashem, certainly, Kaviyachal is as spiritual as it gets, so the more spiritual a person is, the more they can connect to Hashem, so therefore the Nevuah would go more naturally. So that's another reason why a Navi would need to be a very spiritual person. But the Ran says it's understood that humans have frailties, and even a big tzaddik isn't always at the top of his game all day long. And that is, since this drush was probably on Parshas Vayetzi, that's the story with Yaakov. He had that dream of the Malachei Elokim Olim V'Yordim Bo, that the Malachim are going up and down the ladder. So the Ran says that that refers to tzaddikim, those angels going up and down, is a mashal. I mean, the vision Yaakov saw was angels going up and down a ladder, but what it was referring to was that tzaddikim, who are symbolized here as angels, they go up and down. In other words, that even they go up, they're always going up in spirituality, but sometimes they have to go down, as he's going to explain a little further on. Nobody stays at the top of their game. Everyone has a bad day sometimes, not where they do averos, but just some days that they aren't as spiritual as others. They stayed up late, they're overtired. Whatever the story is, people, human beings, can't always be at the top of their game. Sometimes they have to engage in physical things. Anyway, so people aren't always at their top spiritual game, and that's understood that that's the human condition. Okay, so Hashem, since he wants to only have a connection with people that are most capable of being spiritual, the most spiritual people, so therefore the Chazal tell us that Hashem only rests his Shechinas, Mashah Shechinaso, on a Chacham, and an Anav, and a Gibor, and an Ashir, and that sort of thing. So be smart, and humble, and strong, and rich. So, we understand why he has to be humble and wise and all those things. Those are spiritual milos, spiritual good things, good spiritual things. But what does he got to be rich for? What does he got to be strong for? So, the Ran says that the Rambam tells us that what this refers to, the rich and the strong, doesn't refer to physically rich or material wealth, but rather, like it says in Pirkei Avos, Ezehu Asher HaSameach Bechalko, it means that the person's not actually rich, but he's happy with his lot. That's what I mean by a Navi has to be an usher. An usher in that way, that he's happy with his lot, and that a Gibor, he's Kovish Esitro, that he's strong, that he conquers his Yetzara. That's what the Rambam says. The Ran says that's very nice, but he doesn't think that that's shot in the Gemara, because all the Gemara's proofs that this is correct, that a Navi has to be strong, all the proofs talk about physical strength, and the proofs about riches talk about actual riches. So it's a nice idea, but the Ran disagrees, and he doesn't think that the pshat is like the Rambam. And therefore, we need another pshat, because the Ran is convinced that it means the guy, the Navi, must be actually wealthy to be a Navi, and physically strong. Why would that be? That's what the Ran's question is. Why should it be that that's a requirement? So the Ran answers that the point of a Navi is, the word Navi comes from speech. That's what the word Navi means. Nivs Fasayim refers to the speaking of the mouth. And the Navi is going to, his main job is to speak and to connect with people. And if you want to connect with the masses, so then everyone has to relate to you. So if you're a poor guy, so then the rich people aren't going to listen to you. They're going to say, he's a loser, I'm not listening to what he has to say. Or if you're weak, though, they can't look down at you. You can't have anyone in the population looking down at the Navi because of physical things, or else they won't listen to him. So we need him to be the best in every way, so that everyone looks up to him and everyone respects him, and therefore they will respect what he says. That's how the Ran understands why he has to be rich as well as the spiritual things. Okay. And he brings a proof. The Ran says, like Yirmiyahu says, that he doesn't want to be a Navi because he says, Lo yachol daber ki nar anochi. Yirmiyahu says he can't speak, he can't be a Navi because he's a nar. The Ran says, he doesn't say because I'm not Roy, I'm not a Tzaddik. He says, I'm a nar. He has to be physically in the right position to give to be a Navi, to be the one who speaks for Hashem. Okay, so since that's all true, this leads us to the question of why Moshe, who was the main Navi in history, was not a good speaker. One would think that this, after what we just said, that the person has to be physically able, physically fit to connect the people to be the good Navi. So someone who talks with a lisp or has some kind of speech impediment, that's exactly the opposite of what you would want. The main thing is speech, and he can't speak well. And says the Ran, you can't tell me it's just that Moshe naturally was like that. He just happened to be born that way through Teva, however Hashem set up that system, and that Hashem just didn't want to change it. Because the Ran says everything with Moshe was supernatural. There was nothing natural with him. Everything with Moshe was to make him the best. And in fact, the Ran says, Lo kam b'Yisrael k'moshe. I forgot exactly the lashon of the pasuk, but it says there'll never be a Navi like Moshe ever again. That's what the pasuk says. And the Ran says, why would Hashem say that? At the beginning of when we're writing in the Torah that there'll never be someone as great as Moshe, let there be someone as great as Moshe. Why would Hashem, try to cap things and say, look, there'll never be anyone as great of a Navi as Moshe? The Ran understands that Hashem wouldn't say that if they worked hard, could get there. So the Ran answers, because you can't work hard and get there. Moshe was given a gift. The Ran says, Hashem made an ace for Moshe to let him reach a level of nevuah that Hashem could speak to him pe'al peh at all times. He could come to him at any time. It was a high level of nevuah that no one's ever able to reach ever again, because it's not physically possible to reach that plane. Like he explained at the beginning, the malachim go up and down the ladder. No one's always having a good day their whole life. But Moshe Rabbeinu did always have a good day. That was an ace. Hashem made a miracle that he wasn't hindered by emotions or whatever thing, something that would physically, your hormones, I don't know, whatever it is, something that would, you overtired. These things weren't a problem for Moshe because Hashem made an ace that he's always at the top of his game. He would not be hurt or lower his spiritual level when he ate breakfast or whatever. He was always at the top, and that's not physically possible. That was a nace made for Moshe because Hashem needed Moshe to be at that high spiritual level. So therefore he had to make miracles for him. So it was did Moshe have Bechira? I'm sure he certainly started off with Bechira. Did he have Bechira after that point when Hashem made the nace that he would be speaking to him pel peh? I don't know. Maybe some level was taken away. I don't know. But either way, there was everything with Moshe and his nevuah was miraculous. So you can't just say it was nature. It was obviously done on purpose. So why would it be done on purpose? And we even find, the Ran says, that Moshe asked Hashem. He said, when Hashem told him to go be the Navi, Moshe at the burning bush, Moshe said, I can't, I'm not a good speaker. Lo mitmo, lo mishalsham, lo miyaz daberch el avdecha. I haven't been a good speaker yesterday, the day before, and even after, since we spoke, I don't speak well. What did he mean, even after, since we spoke? He means to say, because Moshe was like surprised, like, I'm going to be the Navi, I would assume, after we spoke and you told me I'm going to be the Navi, that my speech impediment would have been miraculously fixed. So Moshe was surprised that Hashem hadn't made an ace to fix his speech impediment. So we don't understand, says the Ran, why Moshe had a speech impediment. That's the question. And furthermore, we know Chazal always tried to say that Moshe had no blemishes at all, because when it says that they heard a nar boche, right, when Moshe was in the Yamsuf, was in the Nile, Anilus rather, so they heard the baby crying. So it says nar boche. They heard a nar, which is usually a young adult, crying. So however old that means, so the Chazal told us that he had the voice of a, let's say, 10-year-old or whatever age a nar is supposed to be, and not the voice of a baby. And Chazal, the Gemara says back to that person, no, it's not true, because then you're making Moshe Balmum. So you see that Chazal understood Moshe had absolutely no blemishes, no mum. He was physically perfect. Except this one, because the Pasuk says so. He had a speech impediment. So again, why is it that he had that special issue? So the Ran answers that the reason is, since Kabbalah Satorah, when we received the Torah, that was the most important event in history. So therefore, Hashem wanted to give it where there would be no room for people to doubt anything. And therefore, if Moshe Rabbeinu was also a really good talker, if he spoke beautifully and eloquently, people think, oh, maybe somebody, they all got swindled. He pulled a fast one on him. He told them kinds of stories. He was a good talker, and therefore he managed to convince everybody of something that wasn't true. So the Ran says, therefore, specifically, Moshe was given a speech impediment because people who have speech impediments, even when they tell the truth, people don't want to listen to them because they just don't want to listen. It's just, the guy sounds like he doesn't sound, someone doesn't sound smooth or whatever. So then you assume that they're not necessarily, just subconsciously, people don't want to follow them. They assume there's something wrong with them, and therefore they don't buy into it. So therefore, Moshe was given that speech impediment so everyone would know if everyone followed him, it must be he was speaking the truth. So that's why he had the speech impediment. Okay, the Ran also says this is also why Yetzias Mitzrayim happened the way it did. In other words, Yetzias Mitzrayim is where Hashem was also one of the most important events in history, probably second only to Kabbalah Satorah, where Hashem showed that nature is no problem for Hashem, and Hashem controls everything, and therefore we saw the miracles with the Ten Makos and the splitting of the sea. So we saw that Hashem controls nature, but he wanted it specifically done and to happen in Egypt. Why? Because Egypt was the magic capital of the world. That's where Kishuv happened, whether it was real, actual magic, or whether it was swindling people, but that's where magic's capital was. Everyone knew that's where all the magic was. So if you're living in Mitzrayim with all those cynical magic people around who know a fraud when they see it, if everyone said over there, Etz Belokim, if all the magicians said, oh no, that's God, so then everyone would know it really was God. So that's why also Hashem always wants to do things when he's doing something like that, a one-time in history thing to show something about him, that he exists, that he gave the Torah, that he controls nature. He does it in the way, Hashem does it in the way where it would be, leave no room for doubt. Okay, anyway, getting back to our original thing, this is why, or what we were just talking about before with Moshe and the speech impediment, this is why the Pasuk says, when Moshe said, you know, I don't want to go because I have a speech impediment and I haven't even been cured since we spoke, Hashem responds, Misam pel adam, miyasam ilim, who do you think put speech in people's mouth and who, miyasam ilim, who places lack of speech? So the Ran says, what does that mean, who places lack of speech? You don't place a lack. If I don't create a lack of something, I can create something, but you don't create something not being there. If you have an animal that doesn't know speech, no one placed in it lack of speech. They just don't have speech. You have to. You usually don't say you yosum ile, placed muteness. So what does that mean? So the Ran says when you're talking about Hashem, yes, there is. Whatever is and isn't is all because Hashem makes it that way. There's no, like, when a person didn't add something, it's not because, you know, if I didn't add, I don't know what, fruit to my refrigerator, so it could be because I wanted to not have fruit there, or it could be because I just didn't think about it. But with Hashem, it doesn't work that way. Everything that is or isn't is exactly because Hashem wants it exactly as it is. So when Hashem was saying, Mi Yasum Ilaim, who do you think places impediments, speech impediments, in other words, was Hashem saying, I wanted you to not speak. That is the point. You need that speech impediment. That's what he was telling him. Okay, that's basically the end of that part of it. Now we talk about Nevuah in general. The Ran says there are two levels of Nevuah that are the basic levels, that is having a Nevuah when you're dreaming or having a Nevuah when you're awake. But both of those come in riddles. They come in the mashal. They don't come usually only Hashem spoke to Moshe, panim alpanim, but regular Nevuah is with a mashal. So as an example is Yaakov's dream. Yaakov saw angels going up and down the ladder. So that was to show him a few things. One is, as we said, to show that tzaddikim go up and down, and they don't always have, you know, they go up in Ruchnis and sometimes they go down. But it was also to show him that he would need extra protection outside of Israel, because Yaakov was leaving Eretz Israel, and he wanted to show him that he will need extra protection outside of Eretz Israel. So, because Eretz Israel is the land where there's more of a connection to Hashem, so if you leave, you don't have as much connection to Hashem, and therefore he would need extra protection. And that's what Hashem says, Ki lo ez avcha ad asher asiseis asher dibarti lach. So Hashem says to Yaakov, I will not leave you ad asher asisi until I do what I said I would do. So here the Ran says, ad asher imasisi, until I do what I do. It doesn't mean like ad and then I will stop. It doesn't mean until and then it won't happen after that. Because the word ad, until, in Hebrew can mean one of two things. Either it means until and then after that it won't happen anymore. Or sometimes it means I will do this until point A and then after point A, for sure I'll do it. Like there will be David's progeny will be the kings of the Jews. Ad ki avo shilo does not mean and it stops when Mashiach comes. It means and it for sure when Mashiach comes. So here too, ad asher asisi, ad asher imasisi, es asher dibarti lach. When Hashem said to that, it meant I will watch over you until I do what I said I would do, and then after that point, certainly I will do what I said I will do. In other words, Hashem was telling him, when you leave Eretz Israel, you need extra protection. Don't worry, I'm going to help you out, even though you're leaving Israel. I'm going to protect you. And certainly once you return to Eretz Israel, I will certainly protect you. So again, Hashem's Shechina is more in Eretz Israel, and therefore when he leaves Eretz Israel, you might think that Hashem's Shechina would leave him, so Hashem was promising he would stick with him, because he would give him his protection, because he was leaving Eretz Israel for a good reason, and he was doing the mitzvah of his father, who said, go get married over there. Plus, he was going, the reason to leave was important. He had to go marry people from the right family. And so now the Ran is going to discuss a little bit, we'll get into that, why that is. What was special about that family? So Yaakov had to leave Israel and not marry a local Israel girl from Canaan. He had to marry people from the family of Laban. So that leads us to a question, which we're slowly going to discuss. But it leads us to a question of what was so great about marrying someone from Laban's family. Laban was not a good guy. So why was it important to marry someone from Laban's family? So people in Canaan were of the Avodah Zarah. So what? So was Laban. He was a bad guy too. What was so great about marrying someone from Laban's family? So the Ran says because there's a thing called spiritual genetics. That is, you can marry someone and that person's spiritual level will be passed down to the children. However, it's not the spiritual genetics I think most of us are used to. Rather, the Ran says it depends what sort of thing. It depends what the mitzvah and aver you're talking about are. So, the Ran says that there are two types of mitzvos and averos. There are the type of mitzvos that affect your body and the type of mitzvos that affect only your neshama. So, for instance, if you do not keep Shabbos, so then it will not affect your body, it affects your neshama. But if you are angry at people or jealous, so that doesn't just affect your neshama, that affects your body too. So you get become a hot-headed person, so it can affect your whole physical makeup. And that, says the Ran, can be passed down to the next generation. And the Ran says that Lavan, even though he wasn't a good guy, he didn't have bad midos. It certainly sounds like from the Torah that he did. I mean, he's a swindler. But I guess he didn't have bad midos. He invited him in. He was nice to him. That's what the Ran assumes, that Lavan didn't have bad midos. He did averos, but he didn't have bad midos, as opposed to the people from Canaan, who were just evil people, ruthless, murderers, that type of idea, besides being over the Avodah Zarah. Mean, angry, jealous people, as opposed to Lavan, was not like that. He just did averos. So that's why it was good, better to marry into Lavan's family, even though he was an Ovid Avodah Zarah and did all kinds of bad stuff. But he didn't have midos issues, as opposed to the people of Canaan who did. So, by the way, I just want to add here, Rav Kreisworth Zatzal, who was the Rav in Antwerp, so he was officially the Rosh Yeshiva in Merkaz HaTorah in Eretz Yisrael. So he had said over there, when he was talking to guys there, or when he was talking in general about dating advice, when people would say, you know, what are the top things you need to look for in a wife, So people assume, I mean, ruchnius wise, people assume first thing is Yirah Shamayim, and second thing is she should have good midos. Or Kresh would always say, wrong. First thing is midos. Second thing is Yirah Shamayim. And I never knew where he got that from. Now I know. It's right here. It's what the Avos did. According to the Ran, that's exactly what happened. The most important thing is midos. Because that's the sort of thing that gets passed down to your children, according to the Ran, physically. And Yirah Shamayim, so you'll teach them the right way to do. But you see, the Avos were more interested in midos than in Yirah Shamayim. Okay, so I just want to make one thing clear. The Ran does say we're not talking about that people who are born with predispositions to be good people or bad people because of their genetics have no bechira. They do have bechira. We're just, the Ran is saying that certain people are born with predispositions towards certain personality traits of being either kind or angry, but you can choose how you want to be. No matter how you're born, you can choose how you want to be. It's just, if you come from bad stock, you're more naturally going to be bad unless you work on it. Okay, the pasuk says, "Mikol mishmar nitzar libcha, ki mimeno totzos chayim." That's a pasuk. I think it was Mishlei. Anyway, so the Ran wants to know what is it that he's saying that since he just told you that the midos and the heart are the most important thing, so he says that's the explanation of the pasuk that says, "Mikol mishmar nitzar libcha," from every mishmar. Which, okay, we'll explain in a second what that means. Guard your heart, because from it comes life. So he says, many Mefarshim learn that Mishmar refers to Isurei Derabanan. And from every Mishmar, from every Isurei Derabanan, Netzor Libcha, be careful in your heart, Ki Mimeno Totzos Chayim, because even though it's not such a chumra thing in Isurei Derabanan compared to a Doraisa, but from it comes life, because that's what will protect you. So the Ran says that's certainly true, it's a nice pshat, but it's not pshat in the Pasuk. The Ran doesn't think that's a good pshat in the Pasuk. Because it has nothing, Isurei Derabanan have nothing to do with your heart. It should have said, Mikol Mishmar Netzor, your hands, or your, whatever, your body. It has nothing to do with the heart. Therefore, he says, it actually refers to that when it says, Kimi Menu, when the Pasuk says, Kimi Menu Totzos Chayim, it does not mean from Isurei Derabanan come life. It means from your heart comes life. Kimi Menu means from your heart. That's where life comes from. In other words, that's the source of all. Aliyah or Yerid and Ruchniyah says all from the heart. And he says that this is actually a super perfect mashal because this is a mashal where the mashal and the nimshal are the same story. For example, he's going to give an example now of what is not a perfect mashal. Most mashalim are not perfect. Most mashalim are give you a story about one thing and that should teach you about some other things. For example, there's the story, I believe it's in Koheles, about the city surrounded by a powerful king and a powerful army, and then there's few people in the city, and they're gonna win. And then some old man with his brilliance comes and outmaneuvers the king and saves the city. Right? I believe that's in Koheles. So there, that's a mashal, and the mashal, the nimshal of that, is that the Yetzirah is that, this is the Ran talking, the Yetzirah is that powerful king, and he has lots of traps, and it looks like it's impossible to beat him just with your brain, because your whole body is full of desire, and your body wants you to do wrong, and so does the Yetzirah. You have very little on your side, except for the brain, and still, the Zakein, that's the brain, the Seichel, or maybe we'd call it the Neshama, if it tries, it can come up with a way to beat the powerful king by just using the Seichel, using the mind to come up with ways to outsmart the king. And that's the mashal there. He also brings another example of a mashal is when it says the lazy man didn't tend his field and it all came up with thorns. So he said that that's a mashal to a person who doesn't work hard in their learning, that if they don't work hard to understand what they're learning, they're going to miss most of the points of what they're learning and they'll come up with nonsense. And that's the mashal of the lazy man who didn't tend his field and got all thorns. Okay, so those are all, he just brought those as examples of mishalim, where the mushal and the nimshal are not the same. The mushal is some story about a field or about a powerful king, and the nimshal is about the Yetzer Hara, the Yetzer Tov, that sort of thing. So, as opposed to this story with the heart, so here, the mushal and nimshal are the same, because the mushal is the physical heart, and the nimshal is the spiritual heart. And he says that really all mitzvos stem from the heart. They all come from the heart. because there are three types of mitzvos. There's the mitzvos that have to do with emunah and having the right hashkafas, believing in Hashem, that kind of thing. That's part of the heart. There's the midah, there's the mitzvos that have to do with beinodom lachaviro, having good midos, helping other people out. That also comes from a good heart. There are the mitzvos, also included in that, that where the point is the heart, like eating matzah on Pesach, where it's a physical mitzvah, but the point is the heart, that to get in your heart that Hashem took you out of Mitzrayim. And then he says, even the chukim, which we don't know why we're doing it, but still that also has to be done with the heart. It has to be done because Hashem said to do this thing we don't understand. So he says all mitzvahs, really, the source of them is the heart, and therefore from the heart is where everything comes from. And therefore even little problems with the heart would be massive problems later on. And he says the same thing goes for averos. Chazal tells us here, huri averos, kashin me avera. Thoughts of sin are worse than the sin itself. What does that mean? So the Rambam tells us it means that to use, you know, to do an act of znus, that's one thing, that's terrible. But to think about znus, so you're using such a lofty thing like the seichel that should be thinking in Torah and using that to rebel against Hashem to do averos, that's worse. That's the Rambam's pshat. So the Ran disagrees. The Ran has a different shot, even though he's, of course, a nice shot, but the Ran says a different shot. He says that it means, what Hirhuri Avera, Kushin Me Avera means is that if someone is always doing a certain Avera, so everyone can slip up once in a while, but if a person is Keseder, is always doing the same Avera over and over and over, it isn't stopping, so it shows that they're a kofer, that they don't believe in something. Either they don't believe there's a Hashem at all, or they don't believe that Hashem is watching and caring and noticing what they're doing, or they don't believe that they're going to get punished for it. Something, there's some kfira there, because why are you consistently doing the same avera? You're not even trying to stop, ever? So if someone is always doing the same avera, there's an element of kfira lying in there, at least in the depths of their heart. There's something they're not fully believing, or else they wouldn't kaseder do the same avera. So that's what it means here. Huri avera, kushin me avera. The thoughts of the avera are worse than the avera itself. Because whatever avera you're doing is one thing, but if the thoughts, meaning it comes from a place of kfira, the person is always nichshal in the same avera, so it shows that there's a certain amount of kfira in there, so that's how he explains it. Anyways, this is Aran says, this is why a person must guard their heart so carefully, because since all mitzvos come from their heart, mitzvos averas, they all, their source is really the heart. Therefore, mikol mishmer netzar libcha ki mimenu, because from the heart is totzos chaim, is where life comes from. That's where everything comes from. So this is the physical mashal is about the physical heart, that all life comes from the heart, as we all know. And therefore, the body is you know, surrounded by ribs, and everything is done to protect the heart. So too, in the nimshal, it's also talking about the heart, but more like the spiritual heart, that everything must be done to protect the spiritual heart. Well, we would call maybe your hashkafas or your emotional connection to Yiddishkeit. I don't know exactly how to phrase it, but we call it usually the heart. That the heart has to be correct, because all of mitzvos and averos stem from there. So the Ran says this is why it was so important for Yitzchak to give the brachos to Yaakov in a tricky way. In other words, meaning Hashem didn't just want to tell Yitzchak he should give the brachos to Yaakov, and he was mistaken about Esav, because then Yitzchak, who thought Esav was the bigger tzaddik, I guess, would have been very sad. And if Yitzchak's very sad, so then he can't connect to Hashem. As how this connects to the heart, as we're saying, the heart is so important. The heart is how a person connects to Hashem. Their heart has to be in the right place. The Ran says even not just their hashkafas have to be right, but even a glad heart, a happy heart. There's no mitzvah per se in being happy, and there's no mitzvah despite the song, and there's no avera in being sad, but it leads to mitzvos and averos. Being a happy person, Hashem is mashra hishchina on happy people. When a person is happy, as we know, when the Nevi'im needed to get Nevuah, so they would play music and then they would get happy, then Hashem would give hishchina, be mashra hishchina on that person, they can get Nevuah. And when a person is sad, Hashem's hishchina goes away. So the heart, besides having the right hashkafos and being a kind person, the person also has to be in the right frame of mind, because that also leads to ruchnius. By being in a happy state, a person can get Gilui Shechina. So, again, that's why he's saying Yitzchak had to think that he was blessing Esav, because he had to be to get the proper nevuah. The bracha he gave Yaakov was with nevuah. It wasn't just a bracha that someone gives their children. Yitzchak's bracha to Yaakov was done with nevuah, and therefore Yitzchak had to be in the right frame of mind. It could have been sad that he was giving the bracha to Yaakov when he found out that Esav was really a Rasha. He had to be in a happy mood, so Hashem didn't tell him that Esav wasn't really the tzaddik. And this way he thought it was Yaakov, so he'd be in the right frame of mind. But it was a nevuah, and that's why Yitzchak had to be in the right frame of mind. And this, he says, of course, digressing more, this is why the bracha worked, because if it wasn't the nevuah, if the bracha that Yitzchak gave to Yaakov wasn't the nevuah, then Esav could have came when he said, when he found out that the bracha was given to Yaakov, Esav should have just come in and said, that was Yaakov, so if you mean to daven for kid A and you daven for kid B, obviously the tefillah is no good. So instead of saying, for instead of Esav's crying, "Habracha achas lecha avi," Dad, you only have one bracha, he should have just said, that bracha didn't count. You thought you were blessing me, so you were davening to Hashem about me, not about Yaakov. Because the answer was, says the Ran, is that that's not what was happening. It was nevuah. And if the nevuah happened, then nevuah happened. The nevuah was said about the guy that Yitzchak was saying the nevuah about. The Ran says, just like someone who wants to plant a wheat kernel and is holding in his hand the barley kernel, and he puts the barley kernel in the ground and he plants it, it'll grow barley. It doesn't matter what you're thinking. The same thing with Yitzchak. He was giving, this was a nevuah. It doesn't matter that Yitzchak was thinking Esav. It didn't matter at all. It was a nevuah about what was going to happen to Yaakov, because it was done through nevuah. Therefore, that's why Yitzchak knew whatever it was going to happen. And that's why Yitzchak said, Gam Baruch Yia. When Esav complained, he said, I gave him the bracha and Gam Baruch Yia. He wasn't saying, like I believe Rashi says that he was being maskim that he should get the bracha. I'm not sure. I think Rashi said that. Either way, he was, according to the Ran, he was saying it's a fact. It happened through nevuah, so he will be blessed. Okay. So continuing on this thing now that we got onto it with Yitzchak and Esav, so the Ran says that Hashem wanted it to be done through trickery for the reason he just said, that this way Yitzchak would be still happy and the nevuah would work. Also, there's another reason why Hashem wanted it to be done through trickery, and that's because Hashem wanted Esav to hate Yaakov's guts. That was important. In fact, says the Ran, Hashem made Esav and Yaakov polar opposites. Even though they were twins, Yaakov was an Ish Tam Yoshev Olim, and Esav was an Ish Sadeh, and that was, they were born that way. Esav was born what we would call maybe ADD. ADHD. He couldn't sit around all day. He had to be running out. He had to be out in the fields. He wanted to run around. And he was born to be a trapper, which means he was a trickster. To properly trap animals, you have to try to think of tricks how to get them. So he was born with that type of mind, that he was naturally someone who would want to good at tricking people. Whereas Yaakov was happy to stay home. He was an Ishtam, Yoshev Olam. He liked to stay home, not to go anywhere, learn all day. Again, they both had Bechira, but they were born with predispositions of opposite to each other. Esav was a hairy, fiery, redheaded, right? So Hashem made them physically opposite and wanted everything to keep them apart. And also the story with the Bechora, where the actual Yerusha was sold. So not just the Bracha, like we were talking about till now, but even the Bechora itself had to be sold, because everyone knows that there's no greater way to get brothers to hate each other than to have a fight over a will, right? To fight over Yerusha, that's the greatest way to keep the fight constant. Why did Hashem want them to always be fighting? Because Hashem wanted it that whenever Yaakov would sin, there'd be someone who would be more than happy to give punishment to Yaakov. So Hashem wanted Esav to always be at odds with Yaakov. And Chazal tell us that Esav will always remain our enemy until Mashiach comes, like Daniel saw in his Nevuah, that the fourth Gullus that we're in today is the Esav, the exile we're in today is considered the exile of Esav. And we see Daniel himself, when he was trying to see when it would end, he didn't understand what he was seeing in his Nevuah, he couldn't figure out when the Gullus would end. So, the Ran says that it makes sense that Daniel could not see when it would end for two reasons. One is, if it was written in the Navi exactly, clearly, when Gullus Edom would end, it would be too depressing for everybody, because obviously we know it's been thousands of years, and hopefully it'll end soon, but we don't want anyone to be sad. And number two is because, since Daniel was towards the end of Nevuah, just like you know, when Nevuah started, it started with Moshe, that was the highest level of Nevuah. As it was going out, the level of clarity went down too. Okay, and then the Ran comes full circle at the end, back to Yaakov's dream. It was in a place called Beis El, and Yaakov called it Machanayim. Why did he call it Machanayim? A camp for two. Machanayim, double camp. Because usually there's a camp in Shemayim for angels, that's where angels dwell. And there's a place on earth for humans, that's where humans dwell. So Israel is the one place where they both dwell together. In Eretz Yisrael, you have Malachim. Wherever you go, you'll be pogeya them. You'll always walk into angels. There are angels all over Eretz Yisrael. And there are humans. So that's why it's Machanayim. It's a dwelling place for both humans and angels. And that is the Chazara of the entire Drushas Haran, Drush number 5. Mir Tashem, next week we will start again with Drush number 6.